Hello and welcome to the Prowess Climbing Coaching Training Podcast. Despite bouldering for 20 years, up to about 70 plus, I've never actually gone through a regimented training program before. That is, until now. Restricted by lockdown but driven by a desire to get straight back on my projects at the first opportunity, this time is right to finally get the fingerboard chalky, stretch out the TheraBands and to train at home. As a professional climbing coach, this seemed a great opportunity to look at this as a case study, a first-hand experience of completing a training program as a climber. And so I've decided to record a weekly podcast to keep you updated on how it's all going. The inspiration for the program has come from my friend Sally Lyle from Far Out Pursuits, who is also working on a very different training program of her own. She'll be joining me every week so we can chart progress, see if our exercises are working, that the sets and the reps are right, and crucially, to see whether we are sticking to our respective plans. More information will be available through my website, prowesscoaching.co.uk, where you'll be able to see the program I'm going through and even download templates to design your own, as well as accessing other resources to help you as a climber. So sit back, relax, and let us do the hard work and enjoy the next episode.
Hi, Pete.
Hello.
Hello. It's nice to see you. It's been... I guess it's been a couple of weeks since we last did a full podcast, so we've got quite a lot to chat about this week. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm keeping busy, writing lots.
Good.
Trying not to go stir crazy.
Let's have a wonderful rundown of your last 2 weeks, then, Pete.
Wonderful rundown. Well, we'll start the week before last, which was almost a write-off in that I, for some reason, was so tired that I couldn't get anywhere with any of the sessions. So the Monday session got cancelled because I was too tired to compete. The Tuesday run, I went out, but I was tired before I started and put in a pretty poor time. But I did complete the run, which was good. The HIIT session on a Thursday, again, I was too tired to actually compete. I did go climbing on the Friday. And it wasn't a bad session, actually. It wasn't too bad. By that point, I felt like I'd recovered a little bit. And then had the weekend off, which was good. And then last week, the weather got a bit nicer and the weather got a bit sunnier. And I decided that I wanted to try and have a climbing day outside, being because I live in the mountains and there's rock all around the house. And that having climbing outside worked best with the forecast on the Tuesday, which messed about massively with my planned training session. And basically the Thursday, Friday ended up shifting to the Monday, Tuesday, and the Monday, Tuesday shifted to the Thursday, Friday. And actually it worked quite well. I didn't actually end up climbing anything anyway because it was too cold, but the HIIT session was great. I had a much better time of it. That was on the Monday. The run, I actually went for a bike ride and that was freezing cold, but I felt like it was a good ride. The only complication was that I found that I hadn't booked my session for Friday, the climbing session, so that got shuffled again to Saturday, but it was fine and it was a really good climbing session and a really good power session.
You said you were really tired after the first week, but you did manage to get going again for the week that's just gone. Did you find any issues with that week of lower intensity? What helped you keep going? Is there anything in particular that you found useful?
I think much of it stemmed back to the concept that we were talking about, trusting the intrinsic feedback. And on every session, I got to the point where I was about to start and looked at my energy levels and went, I'm falling asleep. I'm exhausted. I can barely move, let alone try and do a session. And I realized that it was just not a great idea. And sometimes I think that's necessary. I wouldn't advocate a thing of like, yeah, just sack it off if you're not feeling it. But I think there does come a point where you have to listen to yourself and go, I'm going to hurt myself if I try and do anything in this state. So I think it was a case of being sensible rather than pushing myself too hard. And I think the break probably did me the world of good as well. Last week, I felt like I was kicking on with it again. You know, I was coming back into it. It was almost good to have a bit of a rest.
Nice. I certainly think you've got to take into account that you ramped up a new full-on amazing training session and you've just done 2 weeks of showing up every day and trying maximum effort, so that's got to really have some impact on the load that's asking from your body. So I really don't think that having a reduced load week is going to have done you any harm.
How have you been getting on for the past fortnight?
Well, that is a humongous question. I guess I'll dive into that. Sort of runs from day 5 post-surgery to day 18 post-surgery. So I've had a humongous amount of ups, downs, sideways, things I was expecting, things I wasn't expecting. It's been pretty brutal, but quite satisfying, which is nice. So the issues I've had obviously issues with pain, had some repercussions of general anaesthetic, the painkillers doing a number on my body, issues with being able to sleep, the stressful information of having conflicting information from different physios, so actually trying to work out how to heal the injury I've now got. So having all of that and then going, well, I'm just going to keep climbing, doing my climbing training is pretty hard work. Despite all of that, it's been remarkably successful with getting by far the best results I've had, and with obvious progression. I think the routine has done me the world of good. I guess I've had a 1-day period in the first week and a 3-day period in the second week where I really had to stop. But it's actually meant that I've only actually missed one fingerboard session, and the others I've just adapted slightly. So it's nice to be able to show up and have a go. I think the most impactful thing was all of these extra influences on my body totally messed up my menstrual cycle. So I went from having this lovely clockwork, I know exactly what's happening, 28 day cycles, having 42 days, which meant that I had no idea what was going on. It felt like the world was ending and I hurt like nothing else for about 3 days this week. So that was totally savage. But yeah, like you said, it was worth showing up each time and going, is this exhaustion? Is this bad? Do I disengage? Or is this just something to warm up slower and push through? I looked up some research to do with, because there's been loads of how your menstrual cycle can affect your athletic performance in the last few years. And so I looked up, am I at greater risk at this moment for injury? And it showed up, that was for my session today, for instance, because I was still feeling really tired. But it seems like, no, actually, I'm in the clear. Now is the time to dig deep, not the last 3 days or the 3 days before, when it was definitely the time to go, no. Let's just have a pause here for a minute. So yeah, just a full-on emotional, physical roller coaster of the last 2 weeks that still resulted in me getting better, which is wonderful. You should have seen me when I did one extra pull-up on a rep 5 days ago. It was ridiculous how happy I was.
No, it's good. It means that you're invested in it. It means that it actually matters to you. And I think that's kind of crucial. I think if you're not invested in what you're doing, then it makes it so much harder to actually get anything out of it. And that's why I always train for specific projects, because it makes me invested in what I'm doing. If I try and do general training for me, I just get lost and go, I don't care, which is the wrong attitude to have. But that's why I've developed the systems to be able to make it more effective for me.
Yeah, so you found out what works for you. That sounds great. With all your research this week, you've been investigating the scientific basis to whether high-intensity interval training is a useful tool to involve in climbing training. Have you come up with some clear-cut results?
I have. The extra week has allowed me to read a little bit deeper into it as well, which has been really, really good. And I have been looking specifically at the big question of, is it worth including a high intensity interval training session in with your climbing training program? High intensity interval training is really, really popular with the masses at the moment. I chucked HIIT workout into Google and came up with Coach Mag, Women's Health Magazine, even NBC News have got a piece on a 15-minute full body HIIT workout. So it's really popular out there and it's really, really big. And it basically involves a small amount of time doing activity, a smaller amount of time resting, and then repeating this cycle around about 8 times. Now the big popular method is called the Tabata method, and named after Izumi Tabata, who wrote an article back in 1998 in which he detailed his method of 20 seconds of high intensity exercise, 10 seconds of active rest, repeated 8 times to give a 4-minute workout. That's part of the reason that this is so popular everywhere, is because it is quite a short workout. And when Tabata did his academic study and published his academic paper, it was compared to what's now referred to as low intensity sustained state cardio. Effectively, think going for a half an hour or an hour long jog and compare it to this 4 minutes of exercise. And what they found was that the Tabata training and the high intensity and the HIIT workouts were just as effective as going for a LISS training. Now that's going to be debated by a lot of people, and a lot of the stuff that I've read since then has kind of questioned that, the efficacy of that. The fact is that the academic studies out there support it. Tabata did a paper in 2019 and says, in conclusion, these improvements of both the aerobic and anaerobic energy releasing systems after Tabata training are comparable to those provided by conventional aerobic and anaerobic training, including other types of HIIT, suggesting that Tabata training is useful to enhance sports performances that depend on both the aerobic and anaerobic energy releasing systems. So it is useful. However, there do seem to be a lot of common mistakes, and in the Chinese whispers that follows with it coming into the more mainstream media, what you're finding is that there are regular issues that people have. The first one, and the most important one, is that people don't go hard enough. Tabata's method and all of the HIIT workouts that you see will generally expect you to be working at about 90% heart rates for your periods of exercise, and about 65% of your max heart rate for the 10 seconds of active rest. That's hard. That's 9 out of 10 effort. That's really tough. And I think a lot of people don't put in enough effort during those periods. It is very intensive as well. And one of the pitfalls that I've read about regularly has been that it can risk injury for somebody without a base level of fitness. We'll come back to that in a second. Another of the major issues that keeps coming up are the claims that it's made by its advocates. It's always worth being cautious about the marketing that goes with it. This isn't a wonder pill. This isn't a shortcut for exercise. I think for a lot of people that will be reading these sort of articles and reading these sort of websites, then that will be using a HIIT workout on its own will be effective. It will be very beneficial, primarily because they're comparing using a HIIT workout to doing nothing at all. We're talking about it from a slightly different context. We're talking about a group of people who generally have a high base level of fitness, who are looking to train to increase their abilities and to increase their fitness to be able to climb harder. And it does have plenty of skeptics. One of them seems to be Mark Twite, who wrote an article in 2012 that found its way into Training for the New Alpinism. Mark Twite is not a fan, and he regularly refers to it as a free lunch or a shortcut. The problem is that Mark Twite is looking at this from an alpinism point of view, and he's looking at this from a ski mountaineering point of view. And he, at the time that he found HIIT workouts and incorporated them into his training programs, he replaced his longer versions of exercise and longer forms of training with this high intensity and the short time periods of exercise, and he found that it didn't work. That's a really major point. It has to be used as part of a wider program. It can't be used in isolation and be expected to create these magic results. That's where a lot of the problems come in.
It seems like your recipe that you have put on the website is really an all-round winner. You've got the strength, you've got the climbing, so still specific, and then you've got one long low intensity cardio session and one high intensity interval training session. Now you've researched it even more thoroughly and it supports the idea you originally had, why you came up with the sessions that you have during the week. So that's amazing. Ace.
I incorporated it because I wanted to fill a gap. I had a fingerboard session in there. I had a climbing session in there. I had a run in to keep me sane, primarily to get me out of the house. And I wanted something that was going to fill that gap for that fourth day that I wanted to train. This seemed like a really good option at the time. And I chucked it in and actually, you know what? I've done it every time and it's the easiest one to do. You can do it in the house. It takes 10 minutes and it's nice and simple. And it's actually very enjoyable. You know, for me, I knew that my cardio fitness was a weakness right from the get-go. I don't generally do any running, any cycling or any swimming anymore. I have done in the past. I've done lots in the past, but I don't do any anymore. So I knew that would be a great place to fit this in. And it has kept it interesting for me. It's kept me going, really. It's kept the whole thing ticking over, which has been fantastic.
Even though Tabata does describe the 4-minute training sequence, it's often used for a lot longer. So you can do it like you do with repeaters or anything on a fingerboard. Usually when I do a HIIT workout, I do something similar to Tabata. Then I'll have like a 3-minute rest period. The research I did in it originally, I remember it, originally you're using one energy system, and by the end of the fourth set, which is still only 20 minutes long, you are looking at changing the energy systems you're using, which arguably is particularly useful for climbing and making sure you maximize the benefits.
Yeah, one of the things that I did come across time and again was that most people say that now those times are adaptable, and the Tabata method is one version of it. The HIIT workout that I particularly do on a Thursday is actually slightly unusual in that I do 30 seconds on, 30 seconds resting, and I do total rest, not active rest, where I literally just sit down for 30 seconds and I'll do 6 exercises, not 8 that were suggested on Tabata's original method. So I've tweaked it and I've changed it, but a lot of places say that it's a good idea to do that. And exactly like you say, Sally, part of the reason that I've done that is to replicate the conditions of my usual bouldering sessions. And I have found that it is harder to replicate very, very specific climbing movements, but HIIT workouts can certainly target the right muscle groups, and it's relatively straightforward to target the right areas to be beneficial for climbing muscles.
My weekly sessions include a HIIT workout, and I have chosen the exercises specifically to focus on antagonistic.
I think the crucial part is that it will not do you any harm incorporating a HIIT workout into your climbing, as long as you're not replacing too many sections of your climbing training with HIIT. There's no reason that it won't help you. It will give you increased general fitness, and that's got to be a beneficial thing.
I think the research definitely supports the idea that it's going to be beneficial for you.
Other advantages, coming back to things, I mean, it's surely more specific to climbing muscles than a lot of other low intensity sustained state cardio. One of the exercises that I do on my HIIT workout is actually bicep curls with a TheraBand. But the most important thing for me is that it keeps it fresh, it keeps it interesting. And as long as I can keep things fresh and as long as I can keep things interesting, it means that I'm more likely to come back. And if I'm more likely to come back, I'm going to keep training and I'm going to get stronger. The worst thing for my training is going to be if I get bored. I get where Mark Twight is coming from with his article, and I get why there are skeptics, but I think they mainly come down to the workouts being missold to do something that they're not intended to do.
You've adapted your sessions to be more like bouldering. My sessions are for antagonistics that are going to be, and my love is big walls and trad climbing, and I really think that I benefit from HIIT sessions. I don't know, it would be hard to say I do benefit for your discipline more than I benefit from my discipline. I think it would be really, really difficult to analyse that.
Much of it for me came back down to what I tend to call replication training and putting it into the context of what you want to achieve. And I think it's really important to put it back into the context of what you want to achieve and adapt it and adjust it for you and those set of circumstances. Yeah, I mean, one of the things he said in there is instead of doing quad extensions and seated leg presses, I began doing back and front squats and deadlifts and eventually lunges and weighted step-ups. And this is the important line, because these looked and felt a lot more like what I did in the mountains. That's exactly what I did with my exercises. I chose them specifically to target what I wanted to target. You've chosen your exercises to specifically target your antagonist.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. I think we could even argue that extended periods of climbing, such as like multi-pitch trad, you've got short bursts of hard cruxes and then long periods of
lower intensity moves, I guess.
Yeah, so actually the high intensity interval training your body to switch between energy systems effectively could really, really help. Anyway, I'm sold enough. I'm doing it.
So I will collate all of the information that I've gathered. I will pluck out the best bits and the most important reads, and I will put them onto the website. We'll go through what we've talked about here with input from Sally, and I'll include input from other sources, and we'll put it all into a web page called It's a Hit, and we will place it on the prowesscoaching.co.uk website. So please, if you want to have a bit more of a read or if you're a bit more interested, please have a look there. If you want to know anything else about it, or if you want some professional advice from two climbing coaches, then please do get in touch with us as well. Either on the Prowess Coaching website or the Far Out Pursuits website.
Fantastic. So, same time, let's try next week.
See if we're still hitting the spot.
Ha ha ha. That should be at the point where I'm actually changing from my base phase to my main stage of my training. So, might have some interesting insight into the change.
Sounds good. So until then, happy training.
Good luck.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
And I shall speak to you in a week. This podcast was produced by Prowess Climbing Coaching and Far Out Pursuits and featured Pete Edwards and Sally Lyle. Edit was by Pete Edwards. For more information on the topics discussed, or for help in designing your own training program, please visit prowesscoaching.co.uk. And remember to tune in for the next episode.